Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm always fascinated by that. I'd love to know what was actually playing on it, if even anything was playing. Like, what does Ronaldo listen to before a game?
I reckon they'd be into, like, really shit Europop.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, the only other thing I was thinking is it actually not going to be music, but some, like, super serious motivational tone
could be.
That's being read out to him? Like,
could be. When I interviewed... Do you remember the Wolves goalkeeper, Matt Murray?
Yes.
He told me that when he was playing, he was really... single-minded and focused in the morning leading up to a game. So if he was driving to a home game, he had this CD made up that someone put together for him of all these different radio commentaries of him making great saves.
Okay,
so it could be that.
That's super interesting. Yeah,
he said that the first CD he got made up had a couple of things that he said weren't what he felt were positive affirmations. So they had like negative things in them leading up to positive things. So he didn't want them in there.
Didn't want that. No cheap positivity.
Yeah, that's what it takes for him anyway. Well, we've been looking forward to it for a while, but Zlatan did finally go back to AC Milan, as you mentioned last week, Andy. And then he made his debut against Sampdoria in a barn-burning 0-0. What do we make of his appearance? And is everyone at the club as excited as the kind of football Twitter follower hipsters?
I mean, people are definitely excited. People were excited.
It's definitely what they need, isn't it?
When it's so much what they need. when Zlatan signed, there was definitely a very positive reaction in the city of Milan. When he showed up at training, there were people outside the training gates. When he threw his shirt into the sort of mass of fans outside, everyone went crazy. They sold nearly 60,000 tickets for this game against Sampdoria. His arrival has excited people, at least for a moment. Mm. And the thing that I, have tried to get a feel for talking to different sort of fans and people I know who follow the team either is, okay, but what is anyone actually expecting?
Yeah.
And I think that most Milan fans, I think there are very few who looked at this signing and genuinely expected it to be transformative in some sort of greater way, because the team is terrible. I mean, really, really awful this season. And there's, you know, even before this weekend, I think they were already 21 points off first place, which gives you some indication. All the more painful, I feel like, because it's Inter who are up there, joint top, who are scoring goals so freely. And I think a lot of Milan fans, it's not even about the Champions League, because even that's starting to feel quite unobtainable. It's just about, I mean, having a bit of fun, But at this point also, just scoring a flipping goal.
Yeah,
I mean, they're averaging less than one per game. I think Piontek and Leao, the two sort of actual strikers in the squad, have both got one each from open play in 17 matches. Or right. 18 now. It's awful. I mean, it's almost just like this desperate desire to be able to watch a game of football and enjoy it a little bit, because there really hasn't been much.
But Nikki, one of the things, I don't know if you're able to hear it, but last week Andy was talking about the idea that Zlatan might be a little bit more important for them off the pitch than he is on the pitch. Mm. Presumably that's going to take a while to manifest itself, if indeed it does. But would you go along with that?
I definitely wouldn't disagree that I think Ibrahimovic, certainly at 38, which again, he is 38 now, has something to offer in that regard. I think he is more of a cohesive figure than perhaps he's imagined that, certainly again, at this stage in his career. But, you know, I think some of the expectations even there being put upon him are wildly optimistic. I mean, what are you really expecting this guy to do? To walk into a changing room where there is clearly shattered confidence for a lot of players. I mean, there are a lot of players. I think you can certainly look, you can look at this team and make some very serious criticisms of how money has been spent and the squad they've put together, right? When you look at net spend over the last 3 years, these are numbers from Transfer Market, which aren't perfect because no one knows the exact numbers on some of these deals, but pretty accurate broadly. I think only Man City have spent more in the last three seasons than Milan, right? That's wild. You think about, like what the teams are, but it's also not a squad that has no talent whatsoever. I mean, when you look at some of these players like Calhanoglu and you think about what he did in Germany, you think, okay, he's got something. Look at Piontek and think, okay, well, he was a bit raw, but he did score a lot of goals last season. There are players there who are not total bums. I think certainly the back of the team as well. Romagnoli, in my opinion, is, you know, is actually still performing pretty well. Donnarumma's having a perfectly decent season. And if you want to look at other players who perform well within Serie A, Kessié and Conti, both of them have had good times at Atalanta. But there's just such a sort of shattered sense to this team at the moment that it feels well beyond anything that you can repair with one player coming in. And look, in terms of what he did for 40 minutes against Sampdoria, he came off the bench and there was this sort of moment of excitement. I do think his presence energized it just a tiny bit, but he probably touched the ball about 15 times, you know. You can't transform a team like that.
No, that's right. But when we're talking about like him having an impact on younger players, which, as I was saying last week to the chaps, is something that's like underrated, that he's better at than people give him credit for. I thought it was quite interesting that he came on at the same time as Rafael Leao. And he was working clearly as a foil for Rafael Leao to try and bring him more into the game. I mean, this was a kid who, like, before he joined Lille last year, he spoke to Juventus and Dortmund. A lot of people were really interested in him. And now people have, certainly in Portugal, have looked at it and thought, Leao's made a dreadful career decision moving to Milan. But they've got to try and make it work. I mean, clearly they're trying to shift Piontek in this window, but Leao is something they want to work with. And it was interesting, I thought, in post-game as well, immediately after the game, where obviously there was a great deal of disappointment around the stadium, because as you said, it was an awful game. It was absolutely awful. And you're picking comfort from it where you can find it to an extent. It's interesting to see Ibrahimovic go over to Leao, sort of hold him and like have a little word with him as well afterwards. I wonder if he is that kind of big brother for him, really.
I can see that. I can see him being that. And I think probably Ibrahimovic wants to be that almost at this point in his career. I mean, he's not under, for all of the bravado, he's not under illusions about who he is at this point of his career anymore. And actually, he was sort of asked about that, what he can do and the fact that he's slower. And he joked, he said, oh, well, you know, I can still shoot from 40 meters, which he probably can, by the way. But he is slower. He is sort of heavier. He is, you know, not the athlete that he once was. And I'm certain that he would take a lot of pleasure in being a mentor, which, you know, might contrast some people we might even talk about later in this show in terms of older players and younger players. But I just think, again, that that might be a good thing on an individual basis for Leao, and it might pay some dividends at some point. But I don't know, again, what level people are expecting from that. I don't think that is something like you can come in and wave your Ibracadabra, your magic wand, and suddenly transform Leao.
What do you think it means for Pioli? I mean, is he in a situation where,
I mean, I don't quite know well enough the intricacies of the club and how they sign players, but is he thinking, God, this is an absolute bin fire and this guy coming in is all I need? Or is he thinking, actually, great, a bit of support. I know the guy, we can work together and he can help me.
You know, he's certainly publicly been very positive about it. He described it as a great gift from the ownership.
the dear leader.
Yeah, it did sound a little bit like that. I did think
that. They're treating me very well. Yeah.
But I mean,
while blinking torture in Morse code.
I mean, this is a fascinating sort of category of job, isn't it? Like the manager who gets a big club job, the biggest job of his career, Pioli, for sure.
Hmm.
But under circumstances which you know are very, very suboptimal. Like, I don't know what your hopes and expectations are even as a manager in that situation, yeah, to sort of hang on and make everyone feel like you've done a good enough job this season and that things may change in the summer. But it's above him and beyond him, this recruitment strategy that has sort of been so all over the place. I mean, you think in the summer it was Marco Giampaolo was the manager, and it was very specifically this idea of playing in a Giampaolo style, which involved having the number 10, and then the whole summer spent chasing Correa and not getting him. Mm. Instead in comes Rebic, who is bad and also not, you know, also not really, doesn't really fit that role in that system. So Pioli sort of been brought in and almost asked to, okay, well, this is the squad you have, make it work.
Mm.
And again, like when I go through it player by player, I don't think Champions League squad necessarily, but I think there's stuff to work with here. I mean, mm, I didn't mention before Theo Hernandez, who's been their best player this season. Ismael Benassé coming off being the best player at the Africa Cup of Nations. These are players who should be the basis of, look, a better team than a bunch of the teams ahead of them. Cagliari, you know, arguably better than a team like Atalanta, certainly costing you more than a team like Atalanta squad.
Mm.
There's not nothing there to work with. It's the fact that, you know, you've got like three different people in the same-ish role as director of sport who are all getting paid a vast amount of money. You've got a recruitment strategy that doesn't make any sense. And I think as well as anything, just you've got everyone's morale on the floor right now. And I think that is the one thing in which you can really look at the Ibrahimovic signing and go, okay, this is something that will perk everybody up. It'll make everyone feel good.
Mm.
I just think that probably that's overestimated in terms of how much you can do. I think that feel-good factor lasts about 5 minutes until you're playing Sampdoria and you still can't score for the third game running and it doesn't feel like anything's changed.
I mean, you mentioned, just I'm keen to get into this Pioli thing a little bit more very, very quickly. Is he also at the back of his mind thinking, yeah, I wouldn't kind of be doing this job if they weren't in a bit of a shit state, and so it's my responsibility to make the best of it, because he wouldn't have been considered for the job had they been flying high.
Sure. And I actually think he's done a not bad job, weirdly.
Hmm.
I think right up until the Atalanta game before the winter break, the general feeling was this team is still not where it needs to be, but it's moving in a better direction. The football is qualitatively better. It looks better. It feels like there's a bit more dynamism and idea behind the play. But that defeat to Atalanta was so shattering. And it, again, the Samp game just didn't feel like anything's been shed from it. It is an opportunity for him as a manager. Again, it's the biggest job of his career so far. And so I'm certain he'll be viewing it as, I need to come away from this, even if I don't keep this job, with some sort of positive reflection on me. I don't even know what's a good season for Milan anymore. I mean, they're not going to get relegated, but the European places, I suppose the Europa League places probably aren't as distant as they feel, because those teams will all have their own flaws and slips along the way, but it does feel very distant at the moment.
Well, he's already lasted longer than Marco Giampaolo, so that's something to do. So, and you mentioned Cagliari. I mean, Milan go to Cagliari this weekend, and if they lose that, that'll be a further blow to their morale, yeah, won't it? But we spoke about Zlatan there. One of his previous colleagues at Milan, Gennaro Gattuso, has his feet under the table now at Napoli, but mm-hmm, it's not really going that well. And I wondered, Nicky and Andy, if you guys think that that's to do with the situation he's inherited, or whether that's just because they've had some difficult games. They lost two out of the last three at home. I think they lost to Inter 3-1 at home last time out. What do you make of the situation there at the moment?
The one thing I would say before we talk about Napoli is, Inter were really good. And, yeah, and that was the sort of game coming back straight after the holidays where you think this is a game where, you know, it's going to have that holiday spirit, of course, and Napoli are going to want to have a go at them. And as you say, whatever Napoli's issues at the moment, there's a lot of quality in that squad.
Mm.
But that was a terrific performance for, yeah, Inter. Inter who never win at San Paolo as well, which is something
years.
You can have, like, 23
years. Yeah, I mean, it was huge. And I think that's really significant as well when you look at Do you know what, Inter have been top under the last two managers at this time of year? They were top in January under Mancini.
Yeah.
And they were top in mid-December under Spalletti. And both times they really fell apart in the winter and January. And this has been one of Conte's mantras. We're not pazza Inter. We're not crazy Inter anymore. Mm. And after the game he talked about, he referenced this Fantozzi cloud, which is a reference to a cult movie in Italy from the 70s, where the central character Fantozzi is this clerk who everywhere he goes, he has this rain cloud that is like his personal rain cloud and just rains on him all the time. And it's amazing. The animation on it, you can imagine it's the 70s. It's sort of, I don't really know enough about film to know how it works, but it sort of looks like someone has literally taken the film and overlaid like a picture of a cutout of some of a cloud that someone's drawn.
What's the name of the film?
Fantozzi.
Fantozzi, right, people can look it up.
But he referenced the idea that Inter have this Fantozzi cloud that appears in the winter and just sort of rains on them, and they don't want, you know, they're getting rid of that. I think lots of interesting stuff to say about Inter and how they play, and I think there was an interesting conversation after the game as well between Capello and Conte, Capello on Sky's coverage. About this sort of idea that Inter are a counter-attacking team, but I don't want to get too sidetracked because Luke did actually ask about Napoli.
Don't worry, Andy normally just answers whatever he wants. It doesn't matter.
Well, I think Gattuso is definitely interesting. I found the change personally, just on a personal note, I found it really just disappointing, because whatever was and wasn't right under Carlo Ancelotti, and there's plenty that was wrong, I think that the team at least had a chance to do something more interesting in the Champions League with Ancelotti. I think that you look at the games he got right against Liverpool and you look at the things that they did do right and you think, this season isn't going well anyway. If he could have still got you into the top four and had a run in the Champions League, wouldn't that have been more fun than what you're going to get under Gattuso, which is basically a give up? But it's the end of an era in a big way. And Gattuso, without wanting to be too harsh on him, it feels to me a lot like it's somewhere between a total sort of like, okay, you're just here to sort of caretake through this difficult bit, and you know what, you're a very low cost gamble who might turn out something, because his, you know, his wages are a fraction of what Ancelotti's were, because things are coming apart. You know, we've got Dries Mertens, who has been the absolute icon of this club, the player who surpassed Maradona in the scoring charts just earlier this season, who is almost at the point of frozen out now. We have this weird situation where he's gone back to Belgium to receive treatment and he's extended it, and everyone's asking, is he really even receiving treatment, or is this just how far apart his relationship is in the club has become over the last few months, because he's out of contract in the summer? And every indication from the things that De Laurentiis has said, the way he behaved over the mutiny when they refused to stay in the punitive training camp, just suggests that his relationship with the club is totally fractured.
Can I tell you, it will absolutely break my heart if he doesn't break the Napoli goal scoring record, because he's only three behind Marek Hamsik, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
But it feels realistic that he might not.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? Because if you look back at the, like, all the great players that Napoli have had, and when we do our decade reviews, and I was doing a decade review elsewhere, and, you know, thinking about how Napoli changed and became a contender really in the second half of the decade after re-upping with players like Hamsik and like Edinson Cavani, everything that happened under Mazzarri to make them relevant and competitive again after what happened to them before. It's really interesting that you've had these players who seem like they were destined to overtake Maradona. I mean, Hamsik just did it out of longevity in the end, almost, even though, of course, he's a club legend. But it looked like Cavani was destined to break the Maradona record. It looked like Higuain was destined to break the Maradona record. And is Hamsik going to be the third of like a really unlucky trinity?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, as you say, like, he got beyond Maradona, but doesn't get to be number one. I find it heartbreaking because of all players, like, Mertens went there and he, you know, he embraced Naples. I remember it was one of my, it was one of those interviews I really enjoyed getting to speak to him a few years ago when he was there, and he talked about accepting a culture, like going somewhere and really like embracing it. And he said, you know, when I was in Belgium or Holland, you know, there's this culture of you eat dinner quite early and then you go home and, you know, you sit on your sofa and you watch TV. You know, and here in Naples, people go out at 10 at night for dinner and then you walk by the sea. And he was like, and I, you know, I wanted to live this properly and to do it. And that's why in Naples, he's nicknamed Ciro, not Dries, because he's sort of seen so like Neapolitan that they get to give him like an actual Neapolitan name. But yeah, ever since the mutiny, that refusal again to stay in that punitive training base after the Salzburg game, he has been, it feels like, quite marginalised by the club, if not necessarily his managers. There are other players at the club who are clearly unhappy. And it sort of feels like you're coming to an end of an era with players like Koulibaly, who's almost certainly going to get sold this summer. Everything has gone awry in the sort of feel of that club and the mood of it. So Gattuso has inherited a very difficult situation. In terms of what he's actually doing on the pitch, it feels to me like basically his solution to this has been, let's go back to the time before Ancelotti. Let's go back to what works. 4-3-3, I thought the goal they scored against Inter, whilst lovely, it was like, that's a Maurizio Sarri goal. That's what that is. That's the angle ball over the top to Callejon, which we saw like 30 times a season under Sarri's team. And sure, like, you'll get something from that. Moving Callejon forward, because he was playing deeper under Ancelotti, you'll be able to tap into those familiar mechanisms, things that people know. But I don't think that going back in time is any sort of long-term solution. I mean, for a start, that 4-3-3 under Sarri, what made it tick? Jorginho in the middle. He's not there. You know, Alan is not the same kind of player. Fabian Ruiz has looked desperately bad the last few weeks, and he's playing too deep in that formation. He needs to play further forward. So, I don't know... I don't know that this can end particularly well for Gattuso. I think he probably, is there to see things through to the end of the season. The big question then becomes, what is De Laurentiis? What is the owner's idea here? Because actually, he has built for a long time. Lots of things you can criticize him for, but De Laurentiis has built a model for Napoli that was sustainable, that made them the second best team in Italy for a long period, which they shouldn't be financially. They're not structurally set up to be that. They're not structurally set up to compete for the title, which, you know, people will always forget this because people will look at the number of titles Juventus won and say, oh, it was easy. It wasn't always. Sarri pushed them so hard and so close. But is he still, as an owner, wanting to do that? People have pointed out, you know, as a family, the film Auro, which is his film company, also owns Bari, who are pushing to come up from the third tier at the moment. And there's already discussions of, oh, if Bari were to get up into the top tier and he had to divest himself of one of these two conflicting interests, is it really Napoli or is it Bari he's more interested in? These are questions people are asking right now. And I'm not saying they're answered. I'm not saying he is on his way out, but it definitely feels like an era ending for Napoli. And I think Gattuso, his role in what that can be is only so much. And time will tell us whether or not it's the beginning of a new era and something different, or if it's the end of something big.
Poi Trezeguet sulla destra, la palla spistata, Nedved, attenzione, cerca il fondo, pallonetto, poi arriva ad alta, Del Piero, gol!
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In a move that broke, you're right, Andy, you got a little cough. Yeah.
It's January, come on.
It's true. In a move that broke the hearts of Spurs fans everywhere, Alexander Nubel has agreed a move to Bayern, the 23-year-old Schalke goalkeeper.
And erstwhile captain.
I mean, it feels like a rite of passage, that. Right, you're going to go, are you? Right, give us the armband. Yeah, he's off to...
They're doing what the fans did to Goretzka, the other January transfer window.
So he's now persona non grata at Schalke, but he will be off to Bayern. Manuel Neuer did an amazing job of saying he didn't have the hump about it, and it wouldn't come into his thinking when he was talking about extending his contract. But his face, to me, told a bit of a different story. It's an exciting move. He's an exciting young goalkeeper. Like I say, Premier League club fans here will be disappointed because he was linked with a couple of other moves. But he's gone to Bayern, Andy.
Yeah, and I don't know if Bayern have created a bit of a situation for themselves here, and Nubel's created a bit of a situation for himself, because I think the captaincy is a valid point to start with, because Schalke made him captain at the start of the season, knowing his contract was winding down. They sent Ralf Fährmann off on loan to Norwich to basically say, you're our guy, and we trust you to lead Schalke forward. It's significant, isn't it, when you make a goalkeeper captain, just like it was significant when they made Fährmann captain before, even though he wasn't someone who outwardly looked as if he had the sort of gravitas and I guess the front foot forwardness to be their captain. But with Nubel, it was very much, yeah, you're going to lead this young lot
forward.
Was
that a transparent attempt to try and convince him to stay?
Yeah, it was a transparent attempt. Yeah. And, you know, it sort of goes back to they've tried other things to stop people leaving for free before. And this has become a recurrent problem for Schalke. You know, they offered Goretzka the most money ever would have been paid in the history of the club to stay, and he still wouldn't have it. So to lose another young player for free and to lose him to Bayern is doubly vexing. But it's an interesting strategy from Nubel, because he's a rising young goalkeeper. I think when you look at the order behind Ter Stegen and Manuel Neuer, there is an opportunity for him to break towards the Germany national team. And yeah, he's put himself in a situation where, as things stand at the moment, I mean, Neuer's still thought of as the big dog. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people who think that he shouldn't be Germany's number one at the moment, me included.
Yes, because, you're one of those people.
Yeah, Ter Stegen has been brilliant over the last couple of years, and Neuer, I would argue, somewhat less so. But he does have some iconic status. Now, it's interesting because, of course, Uli Hoeneß has said before, he created that big fuss when there was that discussion over Neuer or Ter Stegen. Well, you know, if Neuer gets dropped, well, we'll withdraw all the Germany players from all the Bayern players from the Germany squad. And, you know, it's a very Hoeneß-esque fuss.
He's quite a tedious bloke. Every time you mention him, you just think, oh, why are you doing that? Why are you saying that?
I think you could say a lot of things about him. I'm not sure you could say tedious.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
He does some crazy stuff.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
But anyway, he sort of he's not part, really, officially at least, of that thought process anymore. He's moved on. They're introducing Oliver Kahn, who's going to become a very influential figure at the club, and he's starting work there this new year. But it's interesting with Kahn's history as a goalkeeper, and a particularly headstrong goalkeeper, how he's going to play his part in managing this situation. Because obviously they're talking to Neuer about a new contract. They want him to stay. There was talk initially, after Nubel initially signed, of, well, maybe there'll be this opportunity for Nubel to get 15 games a season. We'll encourage Neuer to step back and give him a little room so there's a transition period. And, you know,
did Neuer say no?
Well, publicly, he said, look, I'm not resting. Yeah. So where does that leave Nubel already?
Which is, you know, fascinating, because, of course, you've had that, you say, with the national team. Like, he's absolutely, like, no test taken, can't have 1 minute. It's not like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, I'll give up this and that. It's like, no, I'm number one and that's how it is.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can't imagine even, like, cup games, him being like, oh, I'll take a back seat, because he almost, yeah, he just doesn't seem at all interested.
I don't really necessarily blame him for that. I mean, you think of what it takes to rise to the very top of your profession, and you don't really get there, particularly as a goalkeeper, where there's only a spot for one of you.
I thought you were going to say, like, if you bear in mind the amount of times he has to do absolutely bugger all in Bundesliga matches.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was always a problem. Like that season where before the World Cup, where, you know, there's a lot of controversy over whether Neuer should be picked, and I remember, like, they were so desperate for him to prove himself to be able to get in the squad, because he'd been out for absolutely yonks, and they were like, well, if we're winning quite comfortably against Eintracht Frankfurt in the DFB Pokal final, maybe we'll bring him on with half an hour to go.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what would that prove? Like, the first game Neuer played in that 17-18 season, it took him 22 minutes to touch the ball.
Yeah.
So
he ended up playing four games in total, I think, or make four appearances total.
And also they got their asses kicked by Frankfurt in the cup final. But yeah, that's a different story.
Which meant they were able to get Frankfurt's manager, and that worked out brilliantly.
Interesting question, isn't it? Because, you know, you think about Nubel going there, and I think he's even said it in interviews, he likes the idea of being mentored, of having this great goalkeeper and having something to learn from, but that only works if the mentor is
actually
not...
wants to do it?
Yeah, like, oppositional to you. And this may be boring to people who don't want to hear about NFL, but I just thought about contrast with American football and Aaron Rodgers, who's become this great, great quarterback in the league, one of the best. And when he first went to Green Bay, he was drafted high to be this future star. But Brett Favre, who is like a league all-time icon, was there. And everyone was sort of hoping that Favre would be like, okay, come under my wing. I know I'm getting towards the end of my career and I'll help you. And instead, it was just like total opposition, to the point that Favre was doing things like these pranks. Like, he got Rodgers he told Rodgers... He basically took Rodgers' helmet in the locker room and told him it was a charity thing and he should sign it so that he would give it to some people. So Aaron Rodgers signs his own helmet and then realizes afterwards, no, that's my actual helmet, and ends up going out for training in front of everyone with his signature on his helmet. So then everyone sort of points him, going, oh, what a big head is he on the table? So, like, I'm sort of imagining Neuer doing something similar at this point, the way he's talking about this, like stitching Nubel up. But so he can't.
And that's it's an interesting comparison, because, of course, with a quarterback, realistically, there can only be one quarterback. Yes. Same with a goalkeeper, really. I mean, I know it's kind of a modern thing to say we're going to have this goalkeeper for our cup games, but generally speaking, traditionally, it's been one. But then if you look at in midfield, I mean, when I spoke to Declan and Rice for Ramble Meets, he talked quite a lot about how Mark Noble's really taken him under his wing. He gives him a lot of advice. He even takes him out for dinner to speak to him about how they're getting on. And so, but the cynic in me thinks, yeah, but there's room for both of you in that midfield,
If you're Neuer, is this not part of your legacy? I mean, that's the way I'd think of it.
But he's only 33, isn't he? But, he probably doesn't think about that at the moment. He probably thinks maybe he'd do five more years.
Maybe not. But I think, especially at a club like Bayern, where, you know, your sense of what you mean to the club and your legacy is hugely important. You look at the guys who go upstairs there. You look at the meaning outside their playing ability of Lahm, of Schweinsteiger, why it was so difficult to get rid of Schweinsteiger when he was completely past it. And you needed Pep Guardiola to be brutal and go, look, he can't do it anymore. I know it means a lot to the club, but we're getting rid of him. And, you know, that was proved to be totally correct in the way he performed for Manchester United afterwards. So I can't believe that Neuer is completely divorced from that notion, especially as they've always said, you know, you're part of the brass here at Bayern almost. But I think if you're him, you know, you're thinking, surely you must be thinking, well, at the moment I'm thought of as one of the best goalkeepers in Germany's history. Am I going to be thought of as Jens Lehmann after this, if I behave like this?
My only other thought, which I just had as Luke was saying that about only having one, is, you know, is the next natural evolution of the sweeper keeper not to have a keeper who might sometimes play outfield, you know, let him play at sweeper sometimes?
Yeah, why not?
Pep Guardiola would have played him as a centre-back.
I was reading that Nubel was, you know, as a striker up until he was a teenager, and even like when he first switched over at Paderborn, they were saying that he would sort of do a bit of both, and there was one game where they took him out of goal and it was 0-0 at half time and they wound up winning 5-0. So who knows? Maybe you could sort of get some outfield use for him.
Well, I mean, we've moved on a lot as a sport since the goalkeepers just wouldn't be involved in training in any way. But they just, the goalkeepers know how to go over there. They don't get involved. I mean, Edison is a great example. Alisson, they can all play, can't they? What do you think is going to happen here? What's the upshot? How do you predict this will transpire? Fist fight? Say fist fight.
It's going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. But, you know, Bayern live to a degree off discomfort. I don't think, you know, we can get away from that. It's interesting because, as we say, they are moving on upstairs. Hoeneß is gone, although he'll still be poking his oar in. There's absolutely no doubt about that. There's a date for Rummenigge to leave. It's clear that Kahn is going to be a massively influential figure going forward. And, you know, that internal debate is a huge part of what makes Bayern Bayern.
Zidane, le falcate, Figo ha anticipato, palla che sembra essere buona ancora per Del Piero, attenzione Del Piero contro Hierro, una serie di dribbling, lo fa cadere, gol! Alex Del Piero raddoppia, ha giocato, ha beffato.
And your game of the week pick was Sporting v Porto, and it turned out to be a good game. Sporting were beaten at home 2-1 by Porto. I enjoyed it. I watched the vast majority of the game. It was a very, very interesting one. Sporting have been disappointing this season. What did you make of the game? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, Sporting were disappointed that they didn't get anything out of it.
They were very unlucky, I have to say.
Yeah, I think one newspaper, I think it was O Jogo in Portugal, was saying, apart from the first... No, in fact, I think it was Silas, the Sporting coach, said if you take away the first 20 minutes and the last 15, we were the best team. And I think that's a reasonable assessment.
I agree, because the opening goal, Marega's opening goal, was very fortunate.
It was. Well, the ball from Jesus Corona, from right back, he cut inside and played this long pass through the middle. It was an unbelievable pass. And Marega kind of over-controlled it straight into the goal, didn't he?
Maximiano shouldn't have. I mean, it's gone down. Opta have listed that as an error, but I wonder if that's a bit harsh
you'd expect the striker to have a better first touch than that.
Yeah, but not even Marega planned to do it. It's kind of a bit harsh that he's come out to meet him and he's complete. Anyway, we don't need to get into the bones of that. That meant that put them on the back foot. They did hit the post and the bar. Coates hit the bar with a header late on.
Vieto hit the post. That was an extraordinary moment because it was 1-1 at the time. It's a great bit of play from Vieto, who I think has had a pretty good season overall. It's not just his goals. I think his all-round play, and I think this game's a pretty good example of this. He was good. He took the ball behind the Porto defence, which was, we have to say, Pepe went off injured in the first half, and that made a huge difference. They were quite malleable after that. And as Vieto, in that sort of inside left position, got around the back of the Porto defence and eventually had the shot that hit the near post of Marchesin and came back out.
Almost hit him back in the face.
Yeah, well, but the amazing thing about it was there's been a lot of post-match talk about the amount of pyro there was from the Sporting fans.
On the pitch.
And there was actually a bit of pyro on the pitch, quite near to where the shot came back off the post. And before the ball even went out of play for a throw-in, there was a fire marshal on the pitch retrieving it. And you're like, what is happening here? No wonder no defender wants to get near him. His leg might catch fire.
It was a crazy game. I wonder what it means for Bruno. I mean, if indeed it means anything for Bruno Fernandes. Sporting were unlucky in this game. They, as you've already mentioned, Andy, they dominated a decent portion of it, but they are quite far adrift in the league now from the top two.
Yeah, they are.
Fernandes was a guy whose name was on everyone's lips. He would be mentioned every single transfer window for the last three or four. We're in the middle of a transfer window now. He had a quiet game this time out.
He did.
I mean, he's 25 now, I think. He's had a good season, really, so far. But what's the reality looking like for him? Has he kind of missed the boat now for a big move, or do you think it will still happen?
No, I don't think he has. I think it will still happen. They did well to hold on to him last summer. I think none of the offers they got primarily from Tottenham quite matched the level that they were hoping for. And I wonder if they might come to a point where they regret not selling him a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I don't think it will be a regret for him. I think it will be a regret for them, because I don't think his status is particularly affected by what happened last season. He's still young enough to go and do a tremendous job elsewhere. You look at some of the big teams in the Premier League that could do with him, and they could probably still do with him. And the difficulty for them is the whole world knows they've got a difficult financial situation now, a situation where they have to sell players. Now, Acuña, who scored the equaliser, very nice equaliser in this game, he's another one who's susceptible to be sold as well. Ideally, they would not sell Bruno Fernandes this January. I wonder if there might be a similar sort of move to the one that was mooted with Real Madrid last year, where they were potentially going to sell him mid-season and keep him until the end of the season, yeah. Or that they talked about selling him last summer and keeping him for this season. Also with Real Madrid, I wonder if that might happen because they need money. There's no two ways about that. They're not going to make the top two. I think that's pretty clear now. Mm. I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to come out and say that. Even if Porto rode their luck a little bit to win this game, they've got the better squad, they've got the better coach. They're in a better place and, you know, they're really battling it out with Benfica at the top. Interesting side note, actually, about Porto, that after this game, they've won. If you look at the Clásicos, the games between the big three of Porto, Benfica and Sporting, Porto are the only team out of those three who in those direct confrontations have won more than they've lost since the turn of the century. Mm. And that says a lot. Not just about how dominant Porto were in the first decade of the century, but it says a lot about how Sergio Conceição has turned things around, really. I mean, bear in mind, this was a job that Michael Silva was the first choice for, that he didn't accept because they basically said to him, okay, we need you to win us the title back and make €100 million euros worth of sales. And he was like, oh, no, thanks. Maybe I'll like stay in the Premier League, Blair.
I'll go to Everton and do the opposite of that. Yeah. Nowhere near the title and bring in £150 million worth of players the other way.
Yeah, very much so.
He's counting his money now. He's sat around counting his money, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, whereas Conceição's still getting up for work every morning.
Yeah, I know. But punching people, or not.
Or not. Yeah. No, he definitely didn't. He definitely didn't. Okay. But Conceição has done an incredible job. I've mooted a number of times on here, Nicky. I think he will turn up in Serie A at some point. He's a really smart coach. He's a really aggressive coach in the best possible way. And
when he says a number of times, I'm talking over 50. He's mentioned
under 60 though.
Yeah, probably.
But
yeah.
I think, you know, you look at his links with Italian football before, and yeah. I love when Porto played Roma in the Champions League last season, and they were asking him, well, it's kind of like a derby, isn't it? It's like a Rome derby again with you and Di Francesco on the touchline. And he's like, no. And like the minute that they're on the touchline, they're at it. Absolutely at it. I mean, his team plays with his fire as well, which is absolutely fantastic, which I love to see. And that is the sort of fire that enables them to dig out games like this. Now, funnily enough, one of the major criticisms that's been levelled at him in Portugal is, well, he favours players who are strong and tough ahead of artists, really. And and Porto have been spoilt with some good players, some great players in the 21st century. And Conceição said, like, just before Christmas, he said, well, it's fair to say our team this year is not exactly a pornographic team.
Did he? I'll tell you what, Andy, you say that about the players he likes. What about Nakajima, who carries the ball really well, beautiful player to watch?
But it's taken him time to get in the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's been seen as a typical Conceição move. And he did have influence in this game. I thought he's pretty good.
They were terrified of him to me.
They were, especially in the first half. But that thing about aesthetics, that would not be so much of an issue in Serie A, would it?
Well, it depends on the team, but, sure. But yes, I think you're generally right. I mean, it's interesting, of course, because Paulo Fonseca is there right now and doing well. You sort of wonder if, in a weird way, that just sort of broadens people's attention. Although, funnily, Fonseca, if I remember right, had a bad time at Porto when he was there.
Dreadful.
So, yes, I can see it. I suppose you start thinking about which clubs it could be and we've already talked about some, haven't we, with Milan and
would he go to Milan? I mean, look at that in your place and you think, why do I need that?
Do you know what's... I mean, there is a tricky element with Milan, which is knowing... you know, you have to recognise that the mess they are in has got as bad as it is, not entirely because of the people who are in charge now. I mean, you had the sort of weird... you know, the stranger sort of Xi Yonghong era of just absolute bizarre ownership of not, you know, a guy who... many people suspected was not everything he said he was, turned out to be not everything he said he was. And a lot of damage was done then. And, you know, Elliott management, whatever they are or they aren't, they're not interested in losing a ton of money on this. So you'd like to think that they're going to be more rational in some of the decisions that get made going forward. And perhaps that persuades a manager. It's still Milan. It's still a club that can get 60,000 fans in. But I don't know. Conte Sal may be setting his sights higher at this point.
He was a, forgive me if I got this wrong, but he was a player at Lazio, wasn't he? Yes. He was a bit of a legend there, but they're doing well.
I mean, Simone Inzaghi is, yeah. I mean, the only reason that could come up is if Inzaghi gets poached by someone else, because Inzaghi is doing a phenomenal job at the moment.
Yeah.
I can't see otherwise.
Vigo che ha segnato due gol in questa edizione della Champions League contro il Genk. Soprattutto contro il Manchester United nella gara del Bernabeu. Parte, attenzione, para Buffon! E probabilmente questo è un intervento decisivo.
You mentioned Benfica a few minutes ago, Andy.
I did.
I mean, we have to talk about the other big team in Portugal, I suppose.
Leaders of the title race, no less.
But that's not why I want to talk about them. Why I want to talk about them is because Raúl de Tomás has moved to Espanyol just 6 months after Benfica signed him for £20 million. Ex-Real Madrid.
Yes.
Scored a bunch of goals back in La Liga.
For Rayo Vallecano. Who were really struggling at the bottom.
He score a single goal for Benfica?
He scored one.
Not in the league,
cup.
I think, yeah. So what's gone wrong with him, and what does that mean for Espanyol down the bottom of La Liga?
Well, I think it's quite interesting how they've not persevered with him after pushing the boat out, you know, one of the most expensive ever signings, to get a guy who had scored goals in, let's be honest, a better, more high-profile league in an unpromising situation. Because to score that many goals for Rayo, who are not a team... who dominated games and created a lot of chances, I think he's really, really impressive. I think he was playing a slightly different role to the one he anticipated, that he was more of a second striker. And I think the fact that Vinicius came in and did so well and led the line with such personality, I think was an issue for him, especially as the season unfolded. But I do wonder if Benfica have had a little panic here, because they've made a couple of duff striker signings over the last year and a bit. Mm. You think Castillo, the Mexican, he didn't work out well and he went off pretty quickly. Facundo Ferreira, who they signed on a free, but they were paying pretty fat wages to, he went off to Espanyol pretty quickly as well. And, you know, like I said, this is not an insignificant sum for Benfica. What they spent on him in the first place, 20 million euros, they've been able to get their money back. They might even make a slight profit with some clauses that are added, like they're due €1 million if he starts a certain number of games, €1 million if the Espanyol are saved from relegation. And whereas that is by no means a given, I think if you look at the way that Espanyol, who are under their third coach of the season with Abelardo having come in, played against Barcelona, it's very encouraging indeed. And if you've got a bloke who can put the ball in the back of the net for a struggler, like we know Raúl de Tomás can do, I think that's a huge plus for them. So Benfica might be on for that. But I think you look at the advances they've made, or the ground they've made back up on Porto in the last 8 to 10 years, a huge part of that has been their ability to get stuff right in the transfer market. And Porto, who are considered still by some people incorrectly as the kings of the transfer market, them going the other way.
You said last week that's kind of changed now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And like, it's a huge thing for Benfica, and it's how the Luis Felipe Vieira reign at Benfica has really turned around. So I can understand like the opportunity to get your money back so readily, thinking it's not working, rather than persevere with it. It's quite tempting, because it's so important to their model that the things work out right. I mean, we talked last week about how they've made the big signing of Julian Weigl. They've got Bruno Guimarães ready to come over from Brazil, another midfielder as well. So they'll have more in the pipeline, but it's so important to the Benfica model that they get a lot more hits than misses in the transfer market. It's a huge part of their power in Portugal in recent years.
Espanyol, they can't score goals. They're terrible. Is it going to affect them in a big way, do you think?
Yeah, I'm fairly hopeful that it'll work for them. And like I said, the performance that they gave against Barcelona was excellent, especially in the first half.
Because they parachute Poch in. He's out of work. He loves them.
God.
He loves them.
Are you trying to make it... Is it going to make it better for them having a fourth coach this season? Even if it's him?
It could be. It could do.
Zambrotta, scudella,
buona, buona!
Con il Contasini per Neve, gol!
Right, let's turn our attention to the finest cup competition in world football. We're not talking about the FA Cup. I would say that about the FA Cup on the other show I do, but because we're doing European football, I'm going to say it's the Coupe de France. 47,523,114 teams entered it this year. And because there's so many teams in it, we've seen some high-profile stories as well. Marseille needed penalties to get past a fifth division team, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, Trélissac.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
And you can help me with the pronunciations of all these, mate.
There's been a lot of back and forth in the days following that as well, because Marseille put out a pretty strong team and they found it tough there. But what is traditional is that when you have a pro team, and especially a top-flight team, going away to amateurs in the early rounds of the Coupe de France. I say early rounds, it's like the ninth round, but anyway, the early round.
I think it's the seventh, to be fair.
And basically, it's traditional that the team, the bigger team, give up their gate receipts, the amateurs. And afterwards, the Trélissac chair president came out and said, I'd like to say a big thanks to Marseille, who aren't going to give us our...
Why not?
They're part of the receipts. Thanks, it's been a real pleasure. Amateur football thanks you.
Wow. What reason has been given? Any statement?
Well, Marseille said, look, we brought the fans. You wouldn't have had any fans if we didn't come.
God, that's so petty.
Awful.
It's quite Frank McCourt. It has to be said as well. It's very Frank McCourt. Anyway, it's sort of escalated in recent days, and Trélissac have come out again and said, you know, this is just beyond tight. It's really insulting, and all the rest of it. They've not let it go. They've tried to shame them into changing.
Well, and rightly
because
so.
Because that money would be transformative for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And
I mean, on the other hand, Lyon, who won 7-0 at Bourg-en-Bresse, who are just up the road from them, a club who they've got a great relationship with, they may have given up the gate receipts, but the Lyon fans like smashed up all the away stands. So,
great.
They are going to pay for that.
Good. Lyon, yeah. Fine then. What is it, like some kind of Bullingdon club type arrangement? I think I've got this right. Pierrois, is that how I pronounce it?
Pierrois,
who are a sixth-tier team from Réunion Island, won at Ligue de Niort. But how does it work with the Réunion Island team? How do they fund themselves flying to France?
Well, they're helped out. Right.
By Marseille, presumably.
By the FFF. But basically, they want all the games to happen on the mainland. So when the lower division... When there's a team that's at least two divisions below the top flight team or below the pro team, normally it's traditional that they go away. But when it's for overseas territories like Guadeloupe and
Martinique
Martinique or La Réunion, that doesn't hold. They want them all on the mainland. And to be fair, Saint-Pierre-Oise are really enjoying it. I mean, they received a hero's welcome when they arrived back on La Réunion, or the ones who arrived back did. I mean, it's very much like Cuba away. Right. Basically, a load of them have stayed on the mainland and just having a super time.
Oh,
and this is Dimitri Payet's old team, right?
It's Florence Cinema Pongol's old team.
I
like that you're selling this sort of great welcome back, and the picture you showed me from the paper was one player standing next to a local man, I assume a local man,
Holding
a chicken. He'd brought his rooster with him.
Yeah, exactly.
The airport.
Exactly. It's very World Cup, I thought.
Is. Oh, and also Toulouse boss Antoine Kumbuare lost his job.
Aberdeen legend Antoine Kumbuare.
Yeah, they lost to a lower league French side as well. But
only fourth tier in their case.
Presumably that was just a straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, well, I mean,
they are awful.
He was going to get fired anyway because they were in a dreadful mess. But really, the pressure going forward on the club is not going to be alleviated, because it's Olivier Sadron, the president, who's going to be under the microscope. A couple of home games ago, there were some fans who tried to get into the executive boxes and the director's box to have a word with him and express their displeasure. Mm. They were not only turned away, they were allegedly given a bit of a kicking by some of the security guards as well.
Okay.
So that's something that's created quite a bad vibe at the club. I do wonder where Kumbuare goes next. I mean, bear in mind, he was the guy who had Paris Saint-Germain, top of the league, when Ancelotti took over and then guided them down from first to second. That was the year that Montpellier won it.
But this is the thing. Like, I always think that it's one of the sort of the meanest sackings that can happen, right? You know,
Christmas
you just
sacking.
Happened to be there when the club got rich. And even though you had them in first place, you just weren't important enough, so off you went. But since then, it's like his career has been in steady decline. One year with Al Hilal, but then it was, you know, took Lon up from Ligue 2, straight back down, stayed in Ligue 2, didn't do great at Guingamp. Like, it's just like a steady... I mean, he's lost his last 10 games, I think, before.
They've lost every game to start in November. I mean, if he carries on like this, Nicky, he might end up at Milan. You never know.
The whole Lens thing was unfortunate because they were... Talking of investors who aren't what they seem, they had an investor who couldn't get his money released by the bank for a very long time. So they were a mess this season they came up. And he did well to stick with them for so long. I think you could argue that he stuck with Lens for too long. And that sort of, like, recast him almost as a coach that deals with clubs in trouble rather than a coach that, you know, actually took Paris Saint-Germain to the top of the league. And, you know, maybe if he'd have stayed there for the rest of the season, okay, that was a really good Montpellier team with Giroud and Belanda and Remy Cabella, and, you know, they deserved to win the league that season. But the fact is that they were top of the league when Ancelotti took over, and they ended up second.
All right, time for games of the week. Last week, Ryan Hunn picked Real Sociedad v Villarreal and identified Santi Cazorla, who then promptly scored what turned out to be the winner and a 2-1 away win.
That was the best kind of VAR goal, or the worst kind of VAR goal, in whichever way you look at it, because it was a goal where it was immediately flagged for offside. And there were, what, 3 Villarreal players offside? But he wasn't one of them. And so there wasn't even the hint of celebration when the ball hit the back of the net. And then 2.5 minutes later, they all went bonkers.
And Ryan Hunt appears to be able to predict the future, which is obviously great for a football pundit.
Lottery numbers, please, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You had Sporting 1, Porto 2. We've talked quite a lot about that. This week, Nicky, let's come to you first. What game would you recommend our listeners watch? Presumably it's in Serie A, is it?
It's a non-contest this week. I don't care which leagues you're looking across. It's Inter against Atalanta.
Yeah.
Inter, who are... you know, challenging for the title in a way that they haven't done in a very, very long time. Atalanta, who have won their last 2 games in Serie A 5-0, the last team to win consecutive games in Serie A by 5 or more goals, Inter in 1960. So, been a little gap since someone's pulled that off. Atalanta, I mean, honestly, frankly, at this point, I'm almost, if you ask me this question any given week, I'd just be like, who are Atalanta playing? Because there is just... not a more fun team to watch on a weekly basis. They play this such daring football, constantly relying on players to play one-on-one all across the pitch. It may well come unstuck against Inter because Conte has got that team playing very effectively. People have misconstrued it, in my opinion, as counter-attacking football, but it's certainly very ruthless football, very vertical football that can exploit gaps. So it feels like it could go that way, or it could go the other way and Atalanta could just continue this... I mean, oh God, you look at them right now and everyone from Papu Gomez, who Andy knows very well how much I love Papu Gomez, but you know, you look at Jozef Bilicic and you just think that is a player who is feeling himself right now.
Also,
he is in the groove.
Last season, Atalanta gave Inter a bit of a lesson. They beat him 4-1 at home and Inter lost their heads. Got Brozovic was sent off late on. But the season, or 2 seasons before that, at Inter smashed them 7-1.
Yep.
So there's precedent here for a pretty exciting encounter.
Absolutely. And of course, don't forget that Gasperini has his own past with Inter as a manager who was there for all of about 30 seconds before they decided that he was not up to the grade of managing a big club like that. Of course, you know, that was a classic case of a team a bit like Milan now, who had absolutely no idea what they were doing. Very muddled transfer strategy. He did start very badly, but he had been sold, I think, an absolute, I don't know, dummy on that one. That was a very tough job. So he has a little something in his past with Inter as well. So lots of reasons to watch this game. There's also Roma Juve on Sunday night, but I think Inter Atalanta on Saturday is the one I want to watch most.
Catch up with that on Premier Sports. Andy?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go obvious, straight back. Paris Saint-Germain, Monaco on Sunday night. Now, you know, you may think...
it's going to be a battering, isn't it?
Well, you know what? St. Etienne only lost 6-1 in the Coupe de la Ligue this week. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's interesting, I think, because firstly, Monaco under new management, Robert Moreno, as we talked about last week. A very good first win for them in the Coupe de France last weekend, with Keita Balde scoring right at the end against Rennes, who were no pushover by any stretch of the imagination. So it'll be interesting to see how he sets up, because he's quite a brave coach. I mean, you know, is brave just stupid when you go to the Parc des Princes? I guess is the question. The interesting thing as well is against Saint-Étienne, they played the big four up front of Neymar, Mbappe, Di Maria and Icardi.
Mbappe almost scored one of the best goals I've ever seen.
But the Rabona from 20 yards.
Yeah, that it was just ridiculous. Past the post.
But still, Icardi and Mbappe between them got 4 goals and 3 assists.
Right.
Which is something. I mean, it's interesting as well when we talk about the big four, and Edinson Cavani's not in it. You know, yeah. Edinson Cavani, who it seems as we touched on last week, has come to an agreement with Atletico Madrid, more likely to happen in summer than winter. But if you're Cavani, I mean, he's never wanted to rock the boat at Paris Saint-Germain, and both Leonardo and Thomas Tuchel have come out this week and said, look, you know, this isn't Monopoly. We don't want to get rid of him this winter. But you look at that big four and you're Cavani and you think, how much of a part am I really going to play here?
Mm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because you can chart the decline of Monaco just by their results against PSG.
Yeah.
I mean, because back in the day, a few years ago, they were competing and they would pick up wins.
Yeah, they took a good 7-1 at the
yeah, but if you look at the last 4 games against them, they've lost 7-1, 4-0, 4-0 and 3-1. So it could be a difficult afternoon for them, or evening in this case. There's another good game in France this weekend, which is on Friday night. It's Rennes v Marseille, third v second. You can watch that on BT Sport. That's worth looking as well. So I'll pick that one.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.